Hello and welcome to Simply Save, Money Control's weekly personal finance podcast where we discuss all things money. I'm your host Preeti Kulkarni, and in this episode, we'll turn our attention to the all-important annual ritual that most of us do not look forward to, that is filing income tax returns. This is because it is indeed a tedious process and has remained a cumbersome exercise despite extensive digital transformation that it has undergone over the years. However, the fact is that an early start and a meticulous approach to filing returns can actually ensure smooth sailing. To know more about how you can minimize the return filing hassles, we have with us today Aarti Raute, partner with Deloitte India. Hello, Ms. Raute. Welcome to the show. It's great to have you on Simply Save at a time when many taxpayers will be filing their income tax returns for the financial year 22-23 or assessment year 23-24.
A pleasure to talk to you always, Preeti.
Before commencing the process of filing income tax returns, what are the documents that taxpayers should have in place? What are the preparations that they should have in place before they start?
So you actually used the right word, Preeti. Preparation is the key word, because a lot of people believe that, I've done this for the last so many years and I'm familiar. But it's always good to prepare for the tax filing season. And first and foremost, please don't leave it till the last minute. Please start off early, because each year the tax department does a lot of enhancements. They do some tweaks and changes, and you wouldn't like to be caught on the wrong foot at the last minute. So just be a little careful there. In terms of what could be the preparation, before starting the process, you have to understand, or you have to know, what is it that you've earned during the year. Honestly, it appears to be quite simple. You will obviously know the income that you've earned, but it's not that easy, because there will be a lot of passive income which you might not keep a tab of. Like, for example, bank statements, bank interest, bond interest, any kind of, sale and purchase transactions with which your brokerage firm would have taken care of. So these are some of the things that you'll have to take care of. So please start off thinking about each of your sources of income. For example, if you're a salaried person, you will have your Form 16, you will have your bank statements, you will have your 26AS, which is a summary of all the taxes and the income earned by you. The AIS statement will be there, so you please collect that. You should collect all capital gains statements from your brokers to understand whether there is any tax payable on those. If you have had a unique transaction during the year, for example, like a sale or purchase of property, please to make sure that you have all the details, necessary details in place. Rental income, of course. So basically, each and every source of income, just, get down to the granular details and collect those for the year. At times, people actually start off with, getting the bank statements or requesting for bank statements, filling up their passbooks, updating them. Those might also be necessary.
Right. Okay. And you mentioned Form 16 and Form 26AS. So could you highlight the key details in these forms, Form 16, 26AS and AIS, that they should keep an eye on, that taxpayers should keep an eye on?
So basically, Form 16 would be automatically generated to the tax department website now. And it, as I said, it's a summary of the income and the tax taxes withheld for the taxpayer. There could be certain exemptions or deductions that are availed by the taxpayer, like, for example, an HRA deduction or maybe, an ATC deduction. Those need to be, appropriately reported in the tax return. So those are some things to be watched out for. A salaried taxpayer will actually have an option to opt for a different regime as compared to the Form 16. So supposing if the taxpayer has opted for, regular tax regime, where he has, opted for all kinds of deductions, exemptions, but when he is filing the tax return, he would prefer a simplified tax regime, then there would be some edits required in the tax return. So you should be very careful about it. If it's the other way around, that you're going to, you know, switch to a regular tax regime, then you better have all the supporting documents for exemptions and deductions. Like, for example, an HRA deduction. So you'll have to have your rental receipts, your rent agreement. Or if you're claiming an ATC additionally, then you please collect details of whatever investments you've made till date.
Hmm.
Those kind of things. Because that is not provided to the employer, so there are bound to be questions asked by the tax department additionally when you're claiming this in your tax return. 26AS obviously provides details of incomes on which tax is withheld. So this is easy to capture, but one needs to note that 26AS will only report details where taxes are withheld. So there could be other incomes on which taxes are not withheld, and those need to be reported appropriately. The AIS is actually a statement of all financial transactions, whether incomes, taxes are withheld or not. So, you know, it has investments, sale of scrip, even bank interest is reported. So it's kind of an all comprehensive statement. So that has to be kind of looked at and carefully, you know, seen. One thing which is noticed quite often on the AIS statement is that since it is fairly new, there are sometimes an incorrect reporting. So there could be incomes that are missed, or there are additional incomes reported which are not really of the taxpayer. So the taxpayer has to look at the details on hand that they have and report the income correctly in the tax return. The AIS can be used as a reference, but not as the, you know, sole source of truth over there. And they need to have that corrected.
So if we could move to the process of selecting the right form, how should a salaried taxpayer in particular go about picking the right form? And what are the factors that she should keep in mind?
So for a salaried taxpayer, I think generally they would go for an ITR 1 or an ITR 2. So first is your level of income. If you have your total income limited to less than 50 lakhs or so, you should use ITR 1. If it is more than 50 lakhs, you go to ITR 2. The ITR 1 also restricts the reporting to one house property only. Right?
Right.
And it has income from other sources, but it excludes winnings from lotteries or race houses. That is there. So if you have any sources of income like that, or maybe capital gains, then you have to switch to ITR 2. Non-residents or a resident but not ordinary resident should definitely, you know, use an ITR 2. Again, if you if you've traveled overseas, or you have any foreign assets. Let's say you were on an assignment overseas, you have a bank account overseas, which may not be so significant, but you still have it. Then in that case, you should report an ITR 2. So the rules for reporting income in specific ITRs is provided in detail, and one has to be very careful while selecting the ITR. And you know, otherwise, you will either miss out on that income or you will kind of have to redo it.
All right, all right. And any important changes in ITR forms that they should be aware of this year?
So not really. There are no significant changes because I think a lot has been done in the previous years itself. So not really anything that you will, you know, really be worried about. Minor tweaks here and there are there, but not really major.
And could you also talk about ITR 3 and ITR 4 that are not necessarily applicable to salaried taxpayers? If you could start with which category of taxpayers are these forms applicable to?
So ITR 3 very specifically, you know, deals with people who have income from business and profession. Okay. So you should have in individuals and HUFs having income from business and profession need to file ITR 3. other sources of income could be there. So they could have salary income, they could have rental income, all kinds of income. But majorly, if you see, it is ITR 3 for a person who has got a source of income from business.
Okay.
And ITR 4 is basically for, you know, partnerships firm. So other than resident individuals, that you have partnership firm. So people who are going under presumptive taxation, which is like you are applying a very specific rate to determine your income and not necessarily, you know, maintaining books of accounts, those people would have to file ITR 4.
Okay. And finally, what are the mistakes that you've seen people typically make during this period? And what can they do to ensure that this entire exercise is smooth? It is generally assumed to be a very tedious procedure and it is cumbersome, but anything that they can do to ensure that it is smooth and any mistakes that they can avoid?
So one of the things which happens is that people really start late and they rush through the process. And which is why there are lots of things which miss their attention. They don't, you know, specifically give an eye to detail. Earlier, probably such things, I mean, minor misses could have been avoided. But today, it is going to be noticed because everything is digitized. So wherever you're giving your PAN, all those transactions are, you know, with the tax officers, and they're sharing that with you. So 26 AS or AIS reporting is basically things which are available with the tax office, which they're sharing with you. So it is up to you now to make sure that what you're going through these things first and spending adequate amount of time to verify their correctness. Again, I'm specifically talking about verification of correctness with respect to AIS because that is a statement which provides all the details, and we have been noticing quite a bit of, you know, erroneous reportings there. So if you're blindly going as per the AIS statement saying, okay, if it's reported there, let me report it, you might end up paying more taxes or less. Right? Because that's income which is, I mean, details which are collated from various service providers, and there could be mistakes on that. So that is typically where people make a mistake. The second place where people make a mistake is to use the wrong form. So let's say you have two house properties, you start off with IDR 1, you realize you don't have a place to report the second one, so you now have to, you know, go back, redo, go to the IDR 2, that kind of thing. So those are certain things which people really have to kind of take care and make sure that they are giving this exercise, even though it's cumbersome, the due time and respect that it requires.
Right. And you mentioned AIS. Now, in case of any discrepancy, whether when it comes to Form 26 AS or AIS, what can taxpayers do if they realize that there are errors in those forms?
So, see, typically what used to happen is there used to be a mismatch between 26 AS and the Form 16 that were issued by the employer. Okay. To a major extent, that possibility is reduced because now, unlike earlier days, employers used to, you know, separately issue forms.
Right.
But now it is issued through the tax system, so which is why whatever is there in the 26 AS, the same source of data is pulled into the AI statement.
Okay.
26 AS and the AI statement.
All right.
So the only place where there could be a possibility of error, and some people do go through that exercise, is that they actually, you know, summarize their payslips through the year and tie up what is the income in the bank account versus what is their salary versus what is the taxes, and check it out. So in case somebody, people are doing that, then they might, you know, have some error. Otherwise, the reason for mismatch could be very, very, or the possibility of mismatch between 26 AS and the Form 16 is low.
Okay.
The reason for mismatch in AIS is, and the possibility is also high, is because it's information shared by banks, mutual funds, you know, everybody. Now what happens is it's the information is shared as a basic information. So there may or may not be a tax impact on that. So people might not be giving, you know, its due importance. Probably there are mistakes in reporting. So at times people do see they having two bank accounts, but there are three reported there. Or they see transactions of purchase of shares where the shares are reported multiple times. So it's just an error of reporting, and I think it's just a matter of time actually when the people will be, you know, streamlining the process and making sure that things are correctly reported.
Okay. In such cases, they just need to go ahead and report accurate income and other details as per their records, right?
Correct, correct. The taxpayer in the tax return has to record their details, and they can also go online and, you know, provide a feedback saying this is this amount or these line items are incorrect. That could be one option. Or what happens is, even if you don't do that, you there will be a mismatch reported in the AIS versus the tax return filed. So that itself will trigger a query to the tax payer saying that there is a mismatch which is reported, and, you know, please let us know what is.
You have to just respond.
You have to respond, and that's then an opportunity to kind of explain what is right and what is wrong.
All right, all right. All right, Ms. Raute, anything else that you would like to add? Any other tips that you have for our taxpayers who would be who would start filing their returns now?
Yeah, I would say, again, insist on starting off early. Not only it will save you some amount of tax, because you will say you file your return in June, it will save you the interest for July if there's a tax payable. Your process ends up quite a bit early, and you will save, you know, looking at different versions of the software which is issued by the tax department. And lastly, towards the end, there is a lot of traffic because of which the site becomes very slow. So you will save on that also. So I would say it's best to start early.
And also, they should verify their returns after filing them or submitting them online, right?
Absolutely, because generally people would have their PAN linked with their Aadhaar card, which is made so simple. So now you can go ahead and online e-verify your return. In case you are not opting for that option, but you want to submit a hard copy to by post, then yes, you could go ahead and do that too.
All right. Thanks a lot, Ms. Raute. Thanks a lot for being on the show. And
welcome.
Thank you for all the insights.
To be talking to you.
Thank you so much once again.
And with that, it's a wrap on this episode of Simply Save. For more news, views, and updates, do stay logged on to moneycontrol.com.